south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, I'd like to give a shout out to all you flat earthers out there. I know there are two or three of you guys listening. By the way, the last couple of shows, we were talking about dogs. That is, owning dogs in Latin America. And I got a lot of feedback from people who do have dogs in Latin America, offering some tips and advice based on their own personal experiences. For example, we got Jimmy. He says you should never have a long-haired dog unless you're living up in the Altiplano. Not only, he says, because of the heavy rainy season, that means half the year, they're going to come into your house all munged up, caked with mud, dirty and smelly, and they're going to bring all that into the house. Unless, of course, they're really trained up, which is just not the case here in Latin America. You don't see that. He says that alone should make you want to stay away from the long-haired kind. But he says it's even worse if you live on the coast or in low altitudes and have a long-haired dog. Then it's a case of them being lethargic and overheated. Oftentimes, he says they'll just sit around all day in the shade and pant. All right, me, Johnny, chiming in. You know, long-haired dogs in Latin America have another problem most people don't talk about. Garrapatas. That's right, garrapatas. With a G, garrapata. Yep, here in Latin America, there are ticks. They just love attaching themselves to long-haired dogs. Short-haired dogs, too, but not as much. I've personally removed a few ticks from my Dobermans, but funny enough, I've had Rottweilers, too, but never a tick did I have to remove. Maybe ticks just don't like Rotties. Man, I hate ticks, and when I have to extract them from my dogs, ugh, just don't like it. Now, of course, ticks are only going to be a problem if you live out in the boonies or have, you know, a nice big garden. If, let's say, you live in an apartment and just have a big balcony or a terraza, a terrace, you won't have to worry about ticks. But then again, if you live in an apartment, even if you have a big terrace, I wouldn't recommend having a big dog. Unless, of course, you got a park nearby and some green space to give them exercise. Oh, and by the way, in his email, Jim points out another thing that I'm seeing all the time down here. Latin Americans just love Alaskan Huskies. They are an expensive breed to buy here. And believe me, they're not at all comfortable in this climate. Huskies are dogs that live in the ice and snow. They love it. They've got really long hair. Down here in the tropics, they're miserable. Not so much in the Altiplano, but still, they're not comfortable there either. Sure, at night they're fine, but they hate going out in the sun. Now, if I was to ask a gringo on the street, why do you think Latin Americans love Alaskan Huskies so much? I'm thinking only 1 in 100 would nail the answer. Can you guess? Time's up. It's because they've got blue eyes. Yes, believe it or not, that Latino super infatuation with blue eyes bleeds over to dogs, specifically to Huskies, because they're the only breed that has piercing blue eyes. Come on, would you have guessed that? That's why I always say, and it's a fact, if you're a gringa or gringo born up in the United States with blue eyes, and in every other way, you're a loser. You come down here to Latin America and you still will be somewhat of a superstar. Or at least whatever your miserable score was up in the States, you could add 2 or 3 points once you get down here. Hey, I'm living proof. It happened to me. You long-time listeners have heard me say this before. On a good day, up in the States, I was a 6. Down here, I'm an 8 or a 9. Which brings us to another anomaly you'll run into once you get down here to Latin America. Funny thing, too. Talk about the laxity of things and the unenforcement of laws here, or spotty enforcement of laws here in Latin America. I can remember being in many, many residential towers, riding the elevator up to someone's apartment where I'm going to a party or something. Then suddenly, the door opens and some guy or gal and his dog walk out. Even though there's a sign on the elevator and on the front door when you walk into the building that says, no dogs, for that matter, guns, allowed in this building. In fact, over the years, I've rented a few apartments in residential towers and you have to sign a contract, right? You get a copy of the homeowners association's rules and regs. And if you read through those things, you'll find almost every one of those contracts, at least every one I've seen, says no dogs or pets allowed. Meanwhile, in every one of those residential towers, some owner or another, or maybe 5 or even 10 owners, still, despite the rules, have dogs or other pets. And unfortunately, almost always little yappy ones like Chihuahuas and Mini Schnauzers. Yet the homeowner regs say no dogs allowed. And of course, me the gringo, who comes from a place where they will strictly enforce rules like that. I'm thinking, how could that be? And I'm talking about in some real high-end residential neighborhoods. You could understand if no one follows the rules if you live in a crappy barrio neighborhood, a dump. But when you have upper middle class and rich folks living in your tower, you'd think they'd follow the rules at least minimally, but they don't. Of course, what that means is if you're going to rent or buy a place in a residential tower and when you walk in, first thing you see in the lobby is a sign that says, no pets. Well, if you're a pet lover, don't get completely discouraged. If in the first couple of weeks you see a dog in the elevator or you hear some yapping dog at night and the sound is coming from somewhere in your building, then believe me, no one can stop you from having a dog as well. Oh, but I should mention this little story. I was living in a residential tower. And I went down to get my car in the parking garage, and another car pulled up in the spot next to me. It was unoccupied for some time. It was a gringo in that car. And I'd never seen a gringo in that entire residential tower. He was a new tenant. He asked me, you know, the usual questions, how the place was run, what was the management like, what were the renters like and the owners. Turns out he'd only been living there a couple of days, and he said one big thing already bummed him out. He said, according to the homeowner rules, he couldn't have a pet. Which was very strange, he said, because when he first came over to see the place before he rented it, he saw someone in the hall with a dog and he thought, oh, cool, I'll get one too. But he said when he finally moved in and he asked the administration guy at the front desk if he could clarify the specific rules about pets, the administrator guy said they're not allowed. Which confused me, he said, because I saw a person with a dog walking through the building. And I mentioned that to the administrator in the lobby. He said, yeah, there are some people with dogs in this building, but they're grandfathered in, whatever that means. Now, the gringo guy said his Spanish wasn't good enough to actually argue with the guy or ask him questions, so he let it lay. After that, he said when he'd see a person from the building with a dog, he'd think to himself, I don't get it. This isn't fair. Anyway, then I said to the guy, that was your first mistake. I said, grandfathered in? That doesn't make sense. That's just BS. He's just giving you a line. Then I said to him, you should have just brought one in and said nothing. He said, really? How's that possible? Isn't that taking a big chance? I said, look, when I first moved in here a few months back, there was a vacant apartment with a door right next to my entrance door. And one day I saw a young lady, maybe 28 years old, moving in. And trailing her on a leash was a yappy little dachshund. And when she first introduced herself to me as she was moving in, she said, nice to meet you. I'm your new neighbor. Oh, don't worry about my dog. She said he'll settle down when he gets used to the place and he won't bark at all, I promise you. I thought, yeah, right. But truthfully, she wasn't lying. That dog never barked. Anyway, then I looked at that gringo and I said, you get what I'm telling you here? She just brought along her dog, even though the rules say they're not allowed. Don't tell me she was grandfathered in. She was a brand new tenant. And this building's something like 10 years old. How's it possible that she got her dog grandfathered in? That's bullshit. You see what I mean? Only in Latin America. It's the same reason you see guys driving down the street with broken headlights and cracked windshields. Even though that's against the transit rules, and every cop's got to be well aware of it. Unlike in the States, they never get stopped and ticketed for it. Like I said, only in Latin America. All right, moving on. You know, a couple of shows ago, I was talking about Latin American etiquette. You know, it's different in some ways from First World or North American etiquette. Not necessarily better or worse, just different. For example, man, you got to be living down here a long, long time to be able to pick this one out. So this you might want to remember. Latinos are so much more polite than we are, us First World gringos. Even under adverse, chaotic, and even panicky situations, they maintain a certain politeness, a certain etiquette that sometimes we feel is hard to process. For example, I know a 30-something Latina who hasn't paid the rent on her apartment in 4 months. Why? Because the hot water heater in her place broke 4 months ago, and she sent various messages to the landlord or the guy she pays her rent to. He just completely dropped the ball and never sent a maintenance guy over to fix it. She said she'd been sending messages every couple of weeks. He keeps promising they'll fix it, and they never do. So she said to me, you know, I'm not going to pay my rent until they fix this thing. Now, I don't know if the guy she's communicating with owns the apartments, but I know he collects the rents on lots and lots of apartments. That's his job. Anyway, she'd written the guy a number of messages on WhatsApp saying she wasn't going to deposit the rent in the bank for him like she does every month until that water heater gets fixed. She said to the guy, if you want the rent, you have to come over and pick it up personally. I want to talk to you face to face. By the way, she roped me into having a look at it. I took the plate off it and saw some parts had burnt out on the circuit board. So obviously it wasn't an easy fix. She'd need a replacement circuit board. I told her she'd have to keep pestering the landlord. She says this has been going on for something like 4 months now. They've been writing each other back and forth and still no action, but she hasn't paid him either. To prove it, she showed me their correspondence on her WhatsApp messaging. And of course, it's all in Spanish, but the thing that really shocked me is how cordial they had been speaking to each other. Now, if this happened up in the States, man, it'd be a war. It'd be a big fight. People would be slamming each other, accusations back and forth. There'd be harsh words, the blame game. Imagine if your hot water heater was out of commission for 4 months. Would you be fuming and incensed at your landlord or not? Well, when I started reading those WhatsApp messages that went back and forth between her and the landlord, I thought, man, if I was up in the States with that kind of problem with my landlord, I hate to say it, but we'd probably have ended up in court. Anyway, she said her verbal battle with her landlord on WhatsApp had been ongoing. But when she showed me the text, it was no battle at all. They were super nice and extremely cordial to each other. They'd both start out nicely with buenos dias or buenas tardes or buenas noches, you know, good morning, good afternoon, or whatever. Then she'd say, when can I expect you to fix my hot water heater? And he writes back, may God be with you. You are such a good tenant. It's all being planned. Have a nice evening. A couple of weeks later, she sends the same message because he didn't do a thing about it. And he'd reply super nicely once again. In fact, here's what he said. Una lluvia de bendiciones. Señorita, ¿cómo estás? Which roughly translates, let the blessings of God rain down. How are you, young lady? Then after another couple of weeks of inaction, she writes the same message again. He writes back, thanks so very much for the information. Please advise me if you have any other difficulties. Dios bendiga. Vemos pronto. We'll see each other soon and may God bless. Couple of more weeks go by. Neither the guy nor a maintenance guy ever showed up. She writes the same message and by now she's missed 2 months' payment of the rent. On purpose, of course. He writes back 2 weeks later saying, may the Lord bless my favorite renter. I hope all is well with you and yours. Again, all in Spanish, of course. He says, don't forget, it's time to renew your contract next month. Thank you for your kind patience. And don't forget, with the new contract, there'll be a 10% increase in the monthly rent. God bless you for being such a good renter. A few more weeks go by. She's missed 3 rent payments now. She sends him the same message. Good morning, sir. Hope you're having a good day. Just stop by in person with your tools to fix my hot water heater and I'll be happy to pay my rent. He writes back a couple days later. I'll read this exactly. He said, mil gracias y que Dios te lo multiplique en salud y prosperidad. Gracias por tu cooperación en este asunto. Which roughly translates to, 1,000 thanks and let God multiply your health and prosperity. Thank you so very much for your cooperation in this matter. I'll let you know on WhatsApp before I arrive. Anyway, that chatter, that pitter-patter, that messaging has been going back and forth for 4 months now. Meanwhile, during that time, she's had no hot water and he hasn't had the rent money. I'll tell you, if that kind of thing was happening with landlord and tenant up in the States, there'd be no flowery bullshit back and forth on WhatsApp, that's for sure. That's why it's hard to understand. During all that time, 4 months, the conversation between them never got mean, evil, or even testy. Now, I've noticed for a long, long time, that's the way the Latino culture is. Nothing wrong with being polite, nothing wrong at all. I've noticed Latinos like to throw in a lot of compliments and cordiality before they ever get to the point. Sometimes that could be a problem. You want to get to the point, and Latinos just take so damn long to get there. The whole thing seems to somehow be intricately tied to mañana time. I remember, for example, getting a dent in my car fixed at a body shop. Just recently, too. It was really my error because I picked it up at night. I discovered the next day in the bright light of the sun, they'd screwed up with the paint. A certain part didn't match. Brought the car back and the shop guy engaged in all kinds of compliments and small talk before he ever got around to looking at the car. And I didn't really know this guy. I just met him when I brought my car in to get fixed. Hell, I had things to do. I didn't feel like sitting around listening to this guy tell me about how his weekend festivities went. Same thing will happen when you go into a doctor's office or a lawyer's office. So often you'll find before they ever get to the point, they'll end up talking about their families or vacations or last week's birthday or quince años party, the daughter or son's graduation. Often you'll have to get through a lot of small talk and a shitload of photos before you ever get down to business. And you know, unless we got a lot of time on our hands, us gringos and expats are just the opposite. So that's why many Latinos think we're kind of cold and hard, especially when it comes to business. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to getting those flowery, complimentary WhatsApp messages, I've gotten quite a few of those messages myself, even from people you don't even know. For example, a while back, I rented an Airbnb for a month in a residential tower. And the landlord sent me one of those messages that said, "God bless you. Hope you're having a great day. May you have nothing but happiness and good luck in your travels," etc., etc. And he threw in Jesus a couple of times, too. And then, after all that super positive, optimistic nonsense, he said, "Please note that tomorrow morning from 8 to 9, they'll be fumigating the parking lot. It's advisable to close your windows at that time. Thank you so much for your cooperation and understanding." You see what I mean? The preliminary rhetoric, the compliments and the blessings from God were longer than the actual point of the message, which basically was that tomorrow we're going to dust your ass with toxic bug killer. Hey, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with compliments and flowery verbiage under certain circumstances. I mean, let's face it, when you call someone up or you go into a meeting based on a complaint or some kind of problem you're having, why start out blasting all your guns? Why not tone down the stress levels with some flowery verbiage? There is a time and a place, you know. By the way, speaking of text messaging in Spanish, now, you've heard me say a million times I hate WhatsApp and I rarely use it except when you have to talk to your plumber or mechanic or lawyer or make a doctor's appointment. Down here in Latin America, that's about the only way you could hook up with a professional or a builder or a maintenance guy. As much as I hate WhatsApp, in the old days when it first came out, it was a really good way for me to learn my Spanish. It was a great way to improve my Spanish writing skills anyway. Not that my Spanish writing skills are anything to write home about. I probably write in Spanish as well as a 12-year-old Latino kid. Then again, I don't think in all these years I've met a single Latino or Latina who's considered top-notch bilingual in English, who can write a personal or business letter in English without an error. It's rather strange. The only Latinos and Latinas I know who can write a perfect English letter are the entitled children of the Latino rich. They send them to those expensive helicopter schools where their English teacher's an actual American who they imported down to the school to teach the course. So in that respect, it really works. But we're really talking about less than 1% of Latino kids whose parents can afford those kinds of schools. The problem is 99% of American kids can't write a perfect letter in English either. Just saying. Anyway, one of the first things you'll notice when you're using WhatsApp, because you'll have to sometimes, you'll notice right away that Latinos and Latinas say the phrase, ha-ha, you know, H-A-H-A, ha-ha. They'll spell it J-A-J-A. And of course, we'll pronounce it ja-ja, ja-ja. But they'll pronounce it ha-ha, ha-ha, because J sounds like our English H in Spanish. So if you've ever wondered when you saw the letters J-A-J-A, what the hell's going on, it just means ha-ha. It's just something you should know. All right, moving on. Let's take an email from Tommy. He says, "Hi, Johnny. A soon-to-be repeat seminar offender with recent Guatemalan residency introduced me to your show. As a fellow German," he says, "actually, I'm half German and have a PhD in mechanical and industrial engineering. So we have a lot in common. I've traveled and live part-time in almost every Latin American country and city. And I have to say, your show has surpassed the news, the political and sports shows, and everything as my number one podcast to listen to on a daily basis." I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but he says, "After traveling around so many Latin American countries, I have many, many interesting and wild and crazy boots on the ground stories to share with you." He says, "Lately, I've been doing less engineering and more traveling. mostly documenting the Latin American scene, like dance festivals, celebrations, and various parties. He said, I'm easy to spot. I'm the gringo with the 50 pounds of the best camera equipment in the world strapped to my back. So I do stand out a bit and can attract unwanted attention from thugs late at night. So, in effect, some caution and luck is necessary in my case. One confession I have to make, though, he says, unfortunately, I do like reggaeton. That said, Johnny, I have a couple of questions for you today. Question number one. Venezuela is the last Southern American country that I have not visited, not including Guyana, which I don't really consider to be a typical Latin American country or with the typical Latin American feel. Though I do have some friends, he says, from Venezuela and know a few who live there, I'm still somewhat concerned about the trip. I'm planning to get my visa to travel there via Mexico City. I think that's the only way. Any suggestions, he asks, on how to stay safe on that trip? I know there'll be some risk, like false arrest, bribes, thugs, theft. But I figure if I let my local friends take me around, it will be minimized. In fact, he says, I had one Colombian friend who was going to hire security to go around with him in Venezuela on a business trip. I was also told to avoid ground entry. In other words, fly in, because there are paramilitary groups along the Brazil and Colombia borders who will screw with you. He says, I will probably visit Valencia, Caracas, and maybe some mountain or beach areas and look for any dance parties to film. So, Johnny, he says, do you have any thoughts or suggestions regarding my Venezuela visit? What's your own boots on the ground take? He says, I personally can't wait to go to Colonia Tovar because it looks very German in a way similar to the Germanish town of Gramado in Brazil. All right, Tommy, let's start with that question. I know there's more in this email, but let's hit on the Venezuelan thing. Yes, I've been to Venezuela a couple of times, but mostly around Caracas. And after having a Venezuelan girlfriend and some Venezuelan friends for a number of years, I really did learn about the ins and outs and how to maneuver while you're there. You're right, you don't want to enter by ground. Now, the fact is, Venezuelan people love Americans, but the Venezuelan government hates us. And you know they'll spot us in a second by the way we look. And the police and the cops, there's lots of them all over the streets. They will hassle you. They did me. That's why I highly advise you fly in with a Venezuelan at your side. So when you land at the airport, that person can guide you through smoothly. Last time I went was with my Venezuelan girlfriend. And even at the airport, there were a number of times I was pulled over to the side and she did all the talking. And I just know if I'd have been on my own, even though I speak Spanish, it would have cost me a ton of dough and a lot of time just to get the hell out of that airport. Personally, I wouldn't even chance flying in on my own and having a Venezuelan you know meet you at the airport. Because remember, you got to go through customs, pick up your baggage, and go through a lot of security before you walk out those doors at the airport to meet anyone. Venezuelan friends, etc. Again, my advice to stay out of trouble, to not get hassled, you have to hook up with a Venezuelan friend immediately. Especially if you make yourself obvious by filming everything. The cops and the military guys will hassle you. Though one of my Venezuelan buddies insists that it's a lot safer than it used to be because all the Venezuelan street criminals and bad guys are up in the States now. He wasn't joking. In fact, I've been told by a number of Venezuelans that was Maduro's plan. He took his playbook from the Castro brothers, who opened up their prisons in the 70s and 80s, and let them all leave on those boat lifts to Miami. Remember those? I remember when they were housing Cuban immigrants in stadiums in Miami. Most of them criminals and people with sicknesses like AIDS. Who could have predicted it was just a small preview of what's happening today in the U.S. and practically every state? Oh, and by the way, Tom, for a real boots on the ground story, a longtime listener and friend, an ex-U.S. military guy, a gringo, married a Venezuelan girl and he's living in Caracas right now. He said his neighborhood used to be a very good and safe neighborhood, one of the best. And now he said it's a disaster. He hears gunshots every night. He says, one morning he was going out, opened the door, and saw a dead guy laying on his front doorstep. By the way, last time I was in Caracas, a few years back, I heard gunshots every night, too. And I was in a supposedly nice, safe hotel, commercial business, and tourist district. All right, here's another question from expat Tommy. He says, Johnny, any suggestions about improving my voice quality recording at home? Other than a full sound studio, I wonder if the little inexpensive foldable desktop isolation filters help. They basically wrap around the microphone. Well, Tommy, got a question for you. do you think my audio recordings are pretty good? What I mean is the sound coming through nice and professional and clean? Because, you know what, I had a very expensive microphone. It fell down and broke. A Steinheiser model, made in Germany. They're about $500. Anyway, since I've got a lot of band equipment all over the place, when my really good mic fell down and broke, I plugged in the old band standby, which is a Shure M58, one of those golf ball microphones you see almost all bands and singers using. They're about $100. Anyway, I got a lot of those laying around, so that's what I'm using right now, and I've been using that for the last 3 years. And to eliminate the pop, you know, when you say peas and stuff, I bought a package of 12 foam covers. They go right over the ball. A package of 12, maybe $10 on Amazon. And I change them out after every show because, you know, you're constantly breathing and spitting on them and stuff. I know it sounds gross, but there's no other way to explain it. So about once a month, I wash them all out with soap and water, dry them, and use them again. Remember, I use one for each show. But the question is, to your ear, you guys and gals listening out there, is the audio quality pretty good? I've had people tell me there's no difference between what my show has sounded like, let's say in the last 3 years, and what it sounded like before when I used the $500 mic. Oh, and when I'm on the road, I have a different mic altogether, a tiny little portable mic, a USB plug-in. And you know, people have never complained about the sound of that one either. And I think that mic only cost me, I think, $30 or $40. So if any of you guys out there are into doing remote podcasts, you know, you're on the road a lot, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a photo of my microphones and the portable one, brand names and where you get them and all that. Now, remember, the portable mic, the USB mic, doesn't need a preamp, but it's still really cool and really good. Though I did fail to mention my Steinheiser mic and the Shure M58 that I'm using right now, they both need a mixer slash preamp. And from there into the computer mic jack, or USB port. Now, my little mixer slash preamp unit costs about $100. And if you want to see exactly what I use, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you some photos and where to get it. Of course, I'm assuming you think that the quality of my recordings is pretty good. If not, no one's really complained, so the audio quality must be good enough, right? Or not. Oops, we're getting towards the end of the show. I couldn't finish off that email, so we'll get to it next time, right away.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.